Welcome, everyone. Hello again. I'm Tony and this is Ange. And we run the Back to the Future the Musical fans Facebook groups and social media accounts. And the group continues to grow. We now have over 4,200 members and we're still posting to Instagram, Twitter, and you can find all our past interviews on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, and all the other popular podcasting platforms. And today we're absolutely thrilled to be joined by a West End and Broadway legend who recently moved to Hill Valley to take over the role of Doc Brown in Back to the Future, the musical. It's the one and only Corey English.
Hello. Hello. So good to be here. It's exciting.
Great. Thank you so much for giving up your free time to join us this morning. And we always like to ask, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Just coming off a day off, which is always nice. Not that I don't like to be in Hill Valley, you know, 7 days a week, but once in a while, it's nice to have a day off. So, yeah, I'm refreshed and ready to go back for the evening show tonight.
Okay, Corey. So we always like to start these interviews with talking about the progression of your career, how you got started, how you progressed to where you are now. We know you've done so much. When we researched this interview, we saw you'd done so much. So Broadway, we've got Guys and Dolls, Damn Yankees, Hello Dolly, Young Frankenstein, West End. This is just to name but a few. You're in town. The producers, Adam's Family, Sleepless. You've been in movies like Cats. You've been on TV. A little bit of 6 degrees of separation with some of your work, isn't there? Because I know you're in town with Rosanna Hyland.
Yeah.
Lorraine Baines in Back to the Future.
Yeah.
And also in Young Frankenstein with Mr. Roger Bart. So
yeah.
Done so much. So we wanted to take it right back to the beginning. I know you're a New York native. How did it all begin for you?
For me, I wasn't, you know, I like to sing a little bit. I was always athletic, but I didn't do the dancing thing from 4 years old, like a lot of people. I was 12, 13, and this local dance teacher came in to teach us some steps in our choir. And she said, Corey, you'd be a really, really good dancer. And I said, oh, I would? Okay. So I started taking dance class and I liked it. I certainly enjoyed all the attention. I'm not going to lie. My mom and dad were completely supportive. I continued playing all my sports. I still got to be a jock and do all that stuff. Kept singing, did some musicals. Then when I turned 18, and I wasn't very academic, I thought, yeah, college, no way. I tried for a semester. My parents took out a loan for $500 because they couldn't afford to send me to college, but they wanted me to go. So I did one semester. And then I was like, that's it. I'm moving to New York City because I live in Rochester, New York, which is about 7 hours out of New York City. So my dance teacher had taken me down to New York City and I fell in love with it. And I said, I'm going to live here when I was 14, 15. And so sure enough, at 18, I went and I just started dancing, you know, 10 hours a day, did my restaurant job. And then I just danced and danced until I got my equity card and started auditioning for the big stuff. And then finally got Gypsy out of a cattle call, we called them, when there's, you know, over 100, you know, guys there. It was a cattle call. And I got it. I got it was about 150 guys there and I got the gig. So that was a huge, huge turning point. Almost like I kind of equaled it to a college degree. Mm-hmm. That getting my first Broadway show was like, okay, now I'm legit. And people won't say, which restaurant do you work in when you say you're an actor or a dancer? So I was like, yeah. And at one point I was actually keeping my day job at the restaurant and doing the show at night. It was, I was kind of in flux, but I wasn't sure. I was just on a four week replacing someone who was injured, but it could have been more. So I kept my day job just in case. But then after 3 months, I went, nah, I think I'm good. I'm quitting. So Yeah.
It's great to see that your roots started very much in dance and how much of that you've brought to the show, because obviously we love your dance moves in the show. So it's that's where it all began for you.
Yeah. I still, my love for ballet is huge, and 80s hip hop, which kind of goes well with the show. My first ever professional job was a music video with Samantha Fox. So that's how I was introduced to the Brits, with Samantha Fox.
Is that out there? We need to find this.
Yeah, it's out there.
Oh, okay. We've not found that yet, but we'll work on that.
Yeah.
An introduction to the Brits, eh?
Yeah, that's wonderful. I got a great snapshot of the two of us, which I love. I would love to run into her one day to go, you remember that little blonde guy? There I am. But
you know. Yeah.
She taught me about the bow bells. Because she said she was Cockney, and she said that's because I can hear the bow bells. So she taught me the bow bells.
Oh, wow. Sorry. Do you remember the first show that you actually saw, or the first musical that you actually first saw, and it, did it inspire you to follow that route into theatre?
Yeah. Guys, Tony, Ange, I get quite emotional and sentimental and nostalgic all at the same time. So talk about all this stuff. If you see me do this, I don't know why. I mean, I'd like to blame COVID. After COVID, I've really got sentimental, and after having my children, I don't know, the hormones in me have completely like whoosh. So I'm not apologizing. I'm just letting you know, right. If I take a dramatic pause, it's probably because I'm getting my emotions in order so I can communicate. So yes, the first musical I saw that I remember was a high school production of Hello, Dolly. And my brother was in it. And I just loved it. I was completely entertained. Now, I didn't say I need to do that, but I was totally entertained. And then when I was in sixth grade, about 11, 12, I did the high school musical, Sound of Music. So they went to the elementary school to get the little kids. And then I was a part of that. And so that I loved that as well. But of course I still wanted to be a baseball and a basketball player all along.
We've said that you've obviously performed on both Broadway and the West End. Have you found many differences between the audiences? Are one more reactive or more vocal? Or,
yeah, you know, Americans are just louder, aren't we?
Oh,
okay. So, yeah. I'd say that the American audience is, you know, they're a little easy, like they'll stand up, standing ovation every night. Now, at the Adelphi, we're getting quite a few standing ovations. So this might be the one time that it's false, but Americans are quite easy to give entrance applause and to, you know, an easy standing ovation. And they, sometimes I'll say the London audiences in the Hinterlands in the North, because I've toured in the UK now, they certainly laugh a lot more up north, I gotta say. And over in Cardiff, they do like just laugh a little bit more. Sometimes London audiences, I found with Young Frankenstein, were a little hesitant and cautious. That said, we had, you know, still Young Frankenstein worked wonders. We found that in New York, because I did Young Frankenstein on Broadway with Roger. And when he was in Seattle doing Young Frankenstein, he said it was a rock concert. And when they did move into the city on Broadway, it quieted down quite a bit. And then Roger and I went on the road for a year together doing Young Frankenstein. And the audiences were amazing. and loved it more than the New York audiences. So I think London and, you know, the environs, similar to New York and the environs, you know, over there. One amazing thing I like to tell about Broadway compared to the London scene. All shows over in New York start at 8 o'clock. Now, a lot of them do start here in the West End at 7:30, most of them, but they're spread out, the London theaters. In New York, those Broadway theaters are pretty much in a 10-block radius. So at 7:45, 7:50, people are trying to pay their bills at the restaurants and running to the theater. And they're late, and the buzz of the traffic and the noise of Times Square, that all feeds into the theater, into the Broadway theaters. And it was one of my most favorite things to do at the stage door. Stage managers would hate me, but I would stay outside that stage door, and I'd love to watch the people come in at 5 to 8. Sometimes I'd put a jacket over my costume and just love watching the audience come in and the buzz. Some of that happens here, but the theaters are, you know, spread out, so you don't get that Times Square buzz so much here in the West End. Where in New York, that's one of my favorite parts of Broadway.
See, we always like to get to the theater early, but maybe we'll have to hold back when we go to Broadway and might just watch what's happening a little bit and then run.
I mean, it's frantic. It can be frantic, you know, and people might not even be nice. But excuse me, I got a show to see, you know.
Over to that.
Yeah.
Of course, what we really want to talk to you today is about your role in Back to the Future, the musical where you play Doc Brown. Just before we get into that, we have asked our members of our Facebook group if they have any questions that they wanted us to ask you specifically as well. So we'll throw those in as we're going through. Okay. So one of our members, Kevin, actually wants to know if you can remember the first time you saw Back to the Future, the movie.
I've been trying to... So it was either with one of my best friends who was kind of a techie nerd. We can say that, right? Yeah, techie nerd. Don't want to offend anybody. he was one of my best friends, and it was either with him or it was with my girlfriend. And I've tried to remember, and I've asked them both, and they don't remember either. So it definitely would have been in Webster, New York, at that cinema. That's for sure. And just coming out. Loving it. I remember coming out and just, you know, loving it. And certainly when my boys were born, it was, you know, one of the first movies that I had to show them when they were old enough to really appreciate it, you know, 5 years old. Yeah.
And did, like, what was your relationship like with it from then on? Were you just aware of it, like go to it, watch it if it was on TV? Or have you been like, are you a Back to the Future fan? Are you a Back to the Future nerd?
I have to say, I've always been a huge fan of Michael J. Fox from when he was in the, what was his TV show? Oh my God.
Family
Ties. I mean, just loved him. So, and all of his movies, Teen Wolf, all of them, I'd run and see him. So I'd say I was a Michael J. Fox nerd, first and foremost. And whatever he was in, I was a fan of that movie. So, yeah, that would be me.
Cool. I mean, did you might not have been a Back to the Future nerd yourself, but before getting into this show, were you aware of how big the Back to the Future fandom was?
No.
Do you know?
No. No. When on my first day of rehearsal or even before, the resident director said, Corey, learn your lines, because those fans are going to be out there making sure that you are aware of where everything is and what those lines are. So even now, to this day, when I say some of those October 26, 1985, 1:41 a.m., I am very clear and nervous when I say those numbers. Yeah. And one I think I had on, oh gosh, don't tell the wardrobe, but I think I had on my, I had on like 1950s watches when I should have been in the 80s or it was vice versa. And I was like, oh, we're going to get a couple emails from the fans. Yeah.
Oh, great. So you knew about the film, you were aware of it. You watched it, say, if you watched it at the cinema 35 plus years ago. How did you then end up going from there to landing the part of Doc Brown in Back to the Future, the musical? I'm really interested in this process. Obviously, you had some contacts there. Did they call you? Did you call them? Like, what happened?
Well, I saw, I'm going to name drop. So Patrick Wilson, who was a roommate of mine in New York City, he's over doing Aquaman 2. And he was here for a good 3-6 months. And I wanted to go see Back to the Future with him. So, and my wife and my first son, who were on tour with Young Frankenstein with Roger. So we all knew Roger so well that we all wanted to go with the find the right day to go. And so we went with Patrick, and it was Patrick who went, you know, you could play Doc. I went, no, I can't. I'm too short. Come on. So, I mean, energy wise, I thought, yeah, that suits me, you know, very well. But I just thought, you know, size matters. And, you know, even, you know, Roger wasn't up to Christopher Lloyd's height. And it didn't bother me whatsoever. Roger captured his essence and all of the Doc Brown stuff. And I didn't care one bit that it wasn't Christopher Lloyd. You know, I knew I was up there. I was seeing a, you know, terrific comedic actor. So it didn't bother me, but I thought, I'm not going to go with, you know, me. I'm too short. So it was March. It was about 2-3 months after the opening when I saw it. And of course, we loved it and saw Roger afterwards. And we were so excited for him and the reunion of my son, who was 3-4 years old, and Roger together. That was fun. And we were quite excited for Roger, not myself, because I thought, well, there's no chance for me ever. And then 3-4 months, I got a call to come on in and audition. I was like, really? Okay. So for my auditions, I like to go full out. I don't hold back. I'm gonna do my audition like it's my first day of rehearsal. You know, I come in fully prepared. So I booked to see the show without Roger knowing, without anybody knowing, a couple times, because I wanted to get the feel for the musical version of Doc Brown and what Roger was doing with it. I can't be Roger, which the fans will know. You know, I can grab the energy. I can try and find where the lines are going to land and Bob Gale's rhythms of the lines. But I had to try to, there's three tasks here. You want to give tribute to Christopher Lloyd. You want to give Bob all of his laughs and the touching moments you want to be able to nail, because if Doc Brown doesn't have some real truthfulness and sincerity, they're not going to buy the laughs. So you've got Christopher Lloyd, you've got Bob, and then Roger. So you got to take some of Roger's energy and find what he created, where those moments are. Oh, and then there's a fourth thing, and then I've got to make it my own. Christopher Lloyd, Bob, Roger, and then Corey has to come in there, or it's not going to be truthful. You know, you can only do so much impressions, but if you don't make it real, then the audience is going to go, oh, what's wrong? What's different? So that's where I try to put in my own, you know, energy and what I can contribute. Did I answer that? Yeah. So when I did go into audition, I did walk in the room and everybody was there, except for Bob. There was a table of 15 to 20 people, and it was kind of right after COVID, and I have not had an audition in a room in quite some time. So when I walked in, I went, holy, what are you doing here? What are you all doing here? And they're like, what? And everybody was laughing. What do you mean? I was like, I haven't auditioned for people. It's just been a camera for, I don't know, it feels like years. So they laughed. And then I did say, I do realize I'm your Danny DeVito option. I am your Danny DeVito option. So I get it. So they put up the camera so Bob could watch or record it. And I had a really fun time. And I knew that they were enjoying themselves. I certainly was enjoying myself because, again, I had in the back of my head, all right, I'm the short option if they don't want to go for the, you know, because I did see, you know, Ollie kind of nailed Marty and Hugh had nailed George. And there's Ollie, Rock, and Marty. And Roger gave an amazing tribute to Christopher Lloyd, but kept it his own. So I went, you know, in the back of my mind going, they could go for the real deal of Christopher Lloyd or go for the Danny DeVito. And yeah, I'm happy they went Danny DeVito.
We are too. I mean, we had heard Roger was going to take a little break, and we, like, there was a lot of speculation about who would be covering that role while he was out for 6 weeks, and we found out it was you. We were really excited to come and watch. I managed to grab a ticket during that 6 week stint and came down and watched you one matinee and thought you were great. Like you said, bringing your own to it, keeping a bit of the original Chris Lloyd version there, but also Roger. Like, it was brilliant. I had glowing reviews when I left.
Thanks.
We had a few members asking about this as well, but at what point did you then get approached, or how was the decision that you would actually take over full-time once Roger left to go to the Broadway production?
Well, you know, for the producers, they really have to wait to see the whole 6 weeks. They couldn't just automatically go, yeah, you know, you're in. There's a lot of other options that, you know, were available. And I could have sucked. So, they waited until the end of the run. And then in between, when Roger was, I don't know if Roger knew exactly when he was going to leave or how much time he needed to prepare for Broadway to, you know, to come down a little bit before, you know, it's going to start back up for him, which is so cool. How much time he was going to need. So they couldn't really offer anybody anything until everything was clear with Roger. So it wasn't until Roger was cleared that they approached me.
You mentioned, you know, trying to put your own stamp on this role. Neve in our group was asking whether you had any particular sources of inspiration that you were going to. Did you have anything like that? Did you have anyone in mind apart from, you know, Chris and
Yeah, I do. I don't know if any, I wonder if any of the fans know where there might be a coincidence between Christopher Lloyd and this other character that I adore. I don't know if I want to give it away, but I wonder if your fans know. I'm a huge fan of Seinfeld.
Okay.
And there's a character Kramer in there. And I don't know if Michael Richards took inspiration from Christopher Lloyd, because I think he may have. I've never met Michael Richards, and if I do meet him, I'll ask him. But Kramer is a big influence on me, and I saw similarities. Also, Christopher Lloyd played, oh my God, his character in Taxi. And he was the mechanic. And that was a trigger for me to get into Christopher Lloyd and then into Doc Brown. So I went with Michael Richards, and then, no, it wasn't Lotka, that his taxi character, and then Christopher Lloyd. And then I had to sprinkle Roger in there as well. There was one thing that Roger did, what getting on the bonnet of the car or the hood. That was terribly British of me, wasn't it? Ouch. next I'll be saying garage. when he got on the car, he did a great little bit, like, and I'm thinking, I got too much energy to try to pull that bit off. That audience ain't going to buy that. I've just gone, ooh, you know. And I think he could clear the whole car. I think I could jump all the way up on top of the car rather than going on the hood. So I said, can I roll up on this, on the hood? And they went, no way. And I went, oh, why? Because I had done it. I had done it because I said to the choreographer, you mind if I just try something? But I didn't realize how expensive that windscreen is. So they saw me do it, and I saw the whole team go, oh! I went, what? It's not good. They're like, no, it's really good, but you cannot break that windscreen. No, I wouldn't. I'll completely stop. And so it was a no. And so then I had to get down on my hands and knees and beg. I said, listen, give me three times at it right now. I will show you that I will not hit that windscreen. And I did good. And I've only once put my hand just over the hood, just the once. So it's been all right. So that's one huge trait that I was like, no, I gotta do something different there. Yeah, my doc energy needs a little burst. Yeah.
Cool. Well, we've certainly all found, as you've said, that you have put your own stamp on it, and we all adore your performance as Doc. One of our members, Sarah, wanted to know more about the vocal demands of the role and switching between singing Doc, shouting Doc, Doc Brown voice. Do you have a specific warm-up technique and routine?
Lovely question. Great question. Because so here's, you know, I've played parts by Zero Mostel, Max Bialystock and the producers, Marty Feldman, and now Christopher Lloyd. And one big thing to try to even compete with these icons is to say that they did not have to do it 8 times a week. So you've got to find a voice that can be done 8 times a week. And as Roger paved the way, you got to find a safe way to shout. And Roger's, you know, he's magnificent at finding that voice and shouting his, I won't do it now. And I can't do it right now, or I'd hurt myself. But to find that shout and that scream, takes a technique called retraction to get the pressure off of the chords. And I had to figure that out quite quickly as I did my first week. I came down with COVID 3-4 weeks before I went into the November run. And I was pumped. I was 110%. I was really physically fit, vocally and physically. I was doing a play at the Old Red Lion, and I came down with COVID, and I couldn't do the last week of the run. And it took down my vocal strength by probably 50%. And now 4 weeks later, I'm going to try and do Doc Brown. And so I struggled, and I had to learn this technique all over again. I called my drama school teacher, Yvonne Morley, who taught me at Drama Studio London. And 30 years later, she's still going. I'm still going. Pretty cool. She taught me this technique so I could shout like Roger 8 times a week. And so with the shout, with that open voice, not trying to keep it on the chords, I found my Doc voice. Obviously getting inspired by that weather airy thing for Christopher Lloyd. But you never know when or where it's ever gonna strike. You know, that's a trigger. I need to do that every night. I start with that every night. And then I get I drive a scooter into work, and I hum and I siren the whole 20 minutes from Northwest London into with the West End. I love freaking out all of the taxi cabbers and the people and other real bully, other bully scooter riders. I come up with them. And tell you, I like doing. Trying not to belt first, but slowly warming up to then I can go, Marty! Marty! Ah! You know. I will just hum and siren for a good 25 minutes. And then when I get to the theater, we do our group warm up. And then I'm in my room getting into Doc Brown, which getting it to Doc Brown for me, I'll do a little bit of Kramer. I'll do a little bit of Christopher Lloyd. I'll go moment to moment with either a Shakespeare sonnet, or I will do the lines to the show. Because, you know, some days you believe it or not, you don't really feel like entertaining 1,400 people, or you don't feel funny. But my job is to get to a place to do it. And just doing the lines, saying Marty, or just saying Great Scott, has worked so far. Let's see if, you know, 6 months down the road, things might change where maybe I need to listen to Led Zeppelin. Maybe I need to, you know, listen to music. I've started watching old comedy clips of Dean Martin Rose, or watching Whose Line Is It Anyway, the British and the American version, just to get to remind myself, dude, you know, you're a comedic actor. Get there. You go, yeah, I am, aren't I? Great. And then, so you got to go, you know, not the same thing will not work every day, because the audience's atmosphere is different every night. You got to read that. Some days you could just do anything up there and they're going to laugh and love it. But as you've seen, you've come to the show quite a few times, Ange, that audiences are different. Yeah. And that Wednesday evening is very different from Monday night. Monday night was always a horrible, horrible night. And now here's the Wednesday nights are like, not the best nights. But Monday is just flourishing, awesome. So you still got to feel what's true inside of you on that night and what you're getting from the audience. Maybe the audience needs to be picked up, and it's my job to give them something new, something fresh. Or Saturday afternoon, we had an amazing Marty enters, and this what came. And I was like, ah, my job's done. I don't have to do anything extra. I just got to say the lines, sing the right notes, go to the right spots. We're good to go. Which, you know, can be a relief, you know. But if they need a little boost, then I'll turn up my dial to, you know, 110 and go for it, you know.
Great to hear, and really
I'm really not letting you guys talk at all, you know that.
This is the whole point. We love to hear you speak and hear these stories, because that's what we want and that's what our members love to hear, so thank you for sharing them. And I love the thought of random people strolling through London and hear you going by on your scooter doing some of these warm-up techniques going, what was that? I think that would be really funny. We wanted to cover, obviously, one of the more physical parts of the role, probably trickier parts of the role, is the hoverboard. And we saw a video that you posted on your Instagram before you started the role of you trundling down your street on your hoverboard. Hannah wanted to know from our group, what was it like in mastering the technique of the hoverboard?
I was petrified. Yeah, I was petrified. So my 16 and 10-year-old, I brought one home. That's the one we're using in the show right now. You can actually see the scrape marks still on it from my street. The first YouTube video I watched to try to learn this was to stand on it without it on. And that was horrible advice. So when I tried to stand on it, I did a skateboard in the 80s, like we all did. And I was fine. So I thought, I'm not going to have a problem. But standing on a hoverboard when it's not on is impossible. So I thought, I'm not going to be able to do it. They're going to have to re-choreograph it, but it's such a great moment. And then I did kind of hit a low. I haven't even turned it on yet. So then my youngest, he jumped on it. He'd never been on one. And he said, oh, dad, it's easier. It's easier. It's easier. And then he started just going back and forth. And then he found the how to turn it. And then my 16-year-old got on it. Oh, dad, you know, you're going to be able to do this. So then this is like the next day after I beat myself up the whole night. And then I got on it while it was on. And I went, oh, okay. And I just stood on it. And then I could find it. And that was inside on a carpet. Still, the piano was right next door. I could have slipped and hit my head on that. then I found it in the house, just going back and forth on the carpet. And then I took it outside in the street. And then started to get up a little more speed. But still, it's that initial, I want to go. I got my job at home, you know. I got to say, only in the last 2 weeks do I feel like I'm doing what I wanted to do back in November. So now I got the nice shoot coming down stage to the left. I got some turns in there, and I feel much more comfortable on it. I wonder if any of your fans were there the night that the hoverboard needed to be calibrated. And there was one night where I did it. I got on it and it slipped out. I got back on and it slipped out and went, this ain't right. And the computer inside was way off. So I had to dance. I wonder if any of your fans were there that night, because the cast still reminds me of it all the time. So I did the same pattern, but I'm doing some dancing, and I ended in a jazz, James Brown jazz split, which I hadn't done in 20 years.
Wow.
Which I don't know why I wanted to end in a jazz split. My son
heard about that, but. Yeah, I think after people have watched this, people start to claim, oh, yeah, I was there. Do you remember that night?
Right. That would be cool. I have to say, I mostly performed that whole dance sequence for the cast, because that, I guess, it never happened to Roger. But that was their fallback, was like, we'll just stick with the pattern and run it, dance it, whatever, you know, robot it, something 21st century. I think I did more ballet than I did robot stuff.
A great way to showcase all your dancing styles that you've been learning. we do have a question actually about dancing. Vicky from our group, I don't know whether she knows your background and your history with dancing, but in particular, she wanted to know what your favorite number in the show is to dance to.
I haven't danced hip hop. I haven't performed hip hop in Oh, I don't remember. I've taught it. I've taught it in, you know, dance class. But so it's got to be 21st century. When I saw that dance break, I went, oh, this is good. And I said, can I really dance this full out? And they're like, yeah, go. So, yeah. I mean, to do that, I'm in heaven. I'm in heaven. I'm glad it's only like 32 bars long. And my endurance is certainly up there now. And I'm dancing it harder than I did in November, December. I'm really starting to go balls out.
When you're not on stage, I think this is another member question. Cheryl was wanting to know whether there's a particular moment you like to just stand at the side and like a favorite moment to just watch. Do you have one of those, or are you really too busy sort of dashing around, getting changed, getting prepared?
Well, I got to tell you, it's pretty busy backstage. And a lot of times they want you to get the hell out of there. And we also get a note, don't come to stage too soon, because it's dangerous. When I followed Roger backstage, because before you do the role, you follow backstage, you watch all the quick changes. I barely got to see the stage because I couldn't stand in the wings and watch Roger. I had to stand on the back wall and then try to peek. So really was just to learn the backstage traffic. And there were times they just said, Corey, go in the corner, go to the corner. Couldn't see anything, but you did feel like I'm going to get run over here by a very heavy piece of scenery. So there's not too much of those moments that can happen, unfortunately. That moment for me happens on stage. So when Mari starts singing, I've got no future. After I say, there's no way you're stuck here. He starts that next song. And I kind of go into Corey mode. Obviously I'm in character as Doc, everybody, but there's a part of me just love watching Ben and Will perform and sing their song. And I go up and I got to, you know, look at the car and figure it out. But it's just a moment where I can go, and so cool to watch them do their thing. Yeah. And I let that affect me as Corey and as Doc, you know, because if I really see them and see what I'm getting from them, then that changes me truthfully. You know, I don't have to act. I can just be like, oh, there's my buddy singing a song to a full house. You know, I haven't tired of that yet. I haven't gotten bitter.
Corey, I'd like to talk about For the Dreamers. For many people, that's such an iconic, and me personally, that's such a special moment in the show. We've heard previously both Roger and Mark Oxtoby, who was understudy Doc in the original cast, obviously, talk about their inspirations when performing that number. And I was really interested to know where your mind goes to, if you're happy to share, when you're performing For the Dreamers, because it's such a special song. Don't get emotional. I know, yeah.
Oh, do you know what? I've got loads. It's so full for me. And when one thing isn't ticking, I got something else to switch into. That's what's pretty cool about that song. Yes, it's for the inventors, you know. Literally, it was written for the inventors and people who try to invent something in their, you know, in their back sheds, and really it's crap, you know, and they try and they just love trying to dream up a new invention. And it's for them, for Doc, because he's been at it for so long and spent a lot of money into these, you know, his concoctions. So there is that, just looking at those four iconic pictures in on the set. If that doesn't work, you know, if that doesn't shift me, then, you know, those are my angels. Those are my dance teachers and people that have helped me, who, you know, during the 80s AIDS crisis, died. You know, they were teaching me, they were choreographing me, getting me on Broadway. And, you know, I've got four of them right there. So that shifts me, obviously. and then if it's not that, it's the whole father-son thing with Marty. There's my Marty, who is Will and Ben. And that's there. And then really, if I'm way far out in La La Land, there is my father-son relationship with my boys, which is very strong. And then the other day, your fans will enjoy this. The other day, I do the fire extinguisher routine, right? Routine. I mean, the dramatic acting of the fire extinguisher. And I do the last one, and I do Roger's. Oh, it's Minty. This kid in the front row, probably 5, 6, shouts out, "You are nuts!" Right? So I know at that moment, after the last squeeze, I've got to start honing it down and getting into being able to sing Dreamers to take them on the next journey of the song. It's my favorite scene to do because, you know, when we're doing the fire extinguisher and the whole model, it's so much fun. But then the journey to get them down to, we're all dreamers here. We're all in the same room and we're all dreaming, and don't ever stop dreaming. So I know I've got to calm them down. With this kid in the front row was not calming down, and I had everything I could do not to say anything, and I wanted to. And then I saw the mom grab him and take him out, right? So when I drift during Dreamers, I can notice that the seats are empty. I'm like, oh, he left. And then 2 seats over, I saw this mother holding her son and going, you're not going to say anything like that. But cuddling him. And it was just so sweet. And here are these mothers with their boys, or fathers with their boys, right there. And then that can move me to go, you know, singing it to them, and dream, and then passing that dream on, showing them the show. So that there's just so many triggers for me. Thank you for asking that, because that's quite full. I'll look forward to singing that song till I never get asked to do the part again. And then I might do it in my cabaret act. Who knows?
Such a gift of a song. Alan and Glenn have knocked it out of the park with that one, and it's such a moving performance for so many, and yeah, you did certainly deliver that, and I'm very moved watching you perform. So yeah, it's a perfect job, well done. So, yeah, we are coming towards the last parts of the interview now, but we just wanted to ask this one about your highlights since joining the show. We recently spoke to Jordan Benjamin, who you might be interested to know, actually said one of his biggest highlights was his first show with you. And he said the way the conversations flowed between you, he felt like he'd known you for years. It felt like mm-hmm. that. And it was such a fresh, new and exciting thing for him. And he really cited that as one of his biggest moments. So no pressure, like, to, you know, give him a one back. But what's your biggest highlight so far that you would say?
My biggest highlight. I don't want to cop out on this. It's all been an amazing highlight. It really has, just getting to be able to play the part. I'm going to say another memorable moment that was not in front of the audience, but it was on my first day of rehearsal coming to this set and onto the stage. And there were 20 crew members sitting there waiting for me. And I was completely intimidated. And I'm like, what is everybody doing here? You don't see the crew until 2 days before your dress tech rehearsal. But I had everybody looking after me and taking care of me on day one. I only had 6 days on stage before my first performance. And they were so attentive and caring, and they knew how difficult the part was technically. That's why the resident director said, learn those lines, because you don't want to be worrying about the lines, because there's so much tech. And having them look after me was a huge highlight. And I'll bring the crew in again. I think every night when we start from the rain, right after Biff gets punched, and we start, let's go, let's get the bolt, let's time it all, the clock tower. That feels like I'm on a film set, where I literally am just the last piece of the puzzle. There's so much stuff going on that I have to think technically, you know, because if Nick over there is moving his set piece and I'm in the way, like, we all are just like a you know, those old school watches and clocks, all those gears moving in and out. That's what it's like backstage. And I am literally just the last bit of the puzzle. And Marty is as well. And so I do love doing that clock tower. I like doing the stairs. The stairs is a great moment. That's a highlight.
It's another character, right? All those, the automation, yeah, and everything else. It's just,
yeah,
it's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't want to keep you too much longer. We've got a couple of questions to wrap up. Of course, we asked our members, you know, the questions that they really want to use this opportunity to ask you, the really important stuff that they absolutely need to know. And so Steph would like to know, what kind of scooter do you drive?
What kind of scooter? I got a Honda Lead 110. 110, 2008.
Thank you. I don't know whether they're thinking about getting one, or they just want to know more about you so that maybe they can, you know, jog alongside you when you're doing your warm-ups and anything else. I don't know. So, yeah, no, thanks for that.
Sure. That's fun.
Sorry, you and I have spoke about this a few times. I know that you're a big baseball fan, and I know that you have played baseball in the UK. Go support your local team, because there is a big British
baseball community. Yeah.
Shout out your team, Hearts Baseball. Shout out my team, Liverpool Trojans. It hurts me to ask this. The person who asked this is one of our members and huge fan of yours as well, but they I hope you take it in the spirit it's meant. John wanted to know, he knows you're a Yankee fan, and he wanted to know what it's like when the Yankees blew a 3-game lead in the 2004 ALCS against the mighty Red Sox.
Oh, that hurt. Now, I'll say to John, I love to hate the Red Sox. So, you know, in 78, 77, I knew all of the Red Sox players just as I knew all of the Yankee players. So I love to hate them. 2004 hurt a lot. And anytime we lose to the Red Sox. So thanks for bringing that up, John. There was the door gal over at Drury Lane, Jill. She's no longer with us. God rest her soul. She was wonderful. She was a Chelsea fan and a Red Sox fan. And then I came into the Drury Lane Theater as a Yankees fan. One day she called me to the stage door. I'm getting ready to do the show. It's probably 10 minutes before the show. She calls me to the stage door. Something's happened to your scooter. Something's happened to your scooter. And it's parked right outside the stage door. And I got out there and it was covered in Red Sox memorabilia, everything. Nice. So you want to know how I got revenge?
Go on.
Called her. I said, Jill, I called her from my room and it was at intermission. I was like, Jill, I shouldn't have done this, but I had a friend come see me at intermission. They said they were going to the bathroom and now I've lost them. So could you please just say, would Phil McCracken please go to Corey's dressing room? Phil McCracken go to, well, didn't she say it? I totally got it. So that was my revenge for the Red Sox scooter bit.
Yeah, brilliant. Oh, fantastic. Okay, we really are on the home stretch now. Very quick question. Other than Back to the Future, what's your favorite play or musical of all time?
It's got to be The Producers. That certainly is my favorite. You know, it is definitely the funniest show ever written, and to be able to play, you know, the Zero Mostel role is, that was a dream role. Dream role, Igor was a dream role, and now Doc's a dream role. But that was the first one in Mel Brooks. I mean, the laughs, huge. I don't know if it will be done for a long time, but at that moment in time, it was definitely one of the funnest things to perform. I never left stage. I got to sing, dance, and act. I got to be on all pistons were pumping. And it was incredible time. There's another show called Funny Thing Happened Way to the Forum, which is another funny show that I got to do with Whoopi Goldberg on Broadway and Nathan. And that was a lot of where I learned a lot of my comic timing via osmosis, just hanging out with very funny people. And they also taught me how to lead a company, you know, how to be a leader. And hopefully I'll be able to instill some of that, the fun stuff that they taught me, I'll be able to pass on. Because now I'm the oldest one in the company.
Oh, thank you so much. The final question we've got, and we do ask this in all our interviews with all the cast and creative that we've gone through. If anyone hasn't seen the show yet, and if they haven't, then what the hell? But anyway, if they haven't seen the show, why would you say people need to come and see Back to the Future, the musical at the Adelphi?
Well, I mean, it's, I think for me, now I haven't seen Frozen and I didn't see Spider-Man. But this is the state-of-the-art, high-tech, you know, musical of all time, really. And integrated with, you know, old-school theater tricks. And it entertains everybody. You know, I don't think I've ever been involved in a show where dads are bringing their boys. The wives aren't dragging them to see musicals. The boys are dressing up to the show. Just like, you know, the Frozen, you know, costumes, they're all dressing up to go to Frozen. And here I look out and I see Doc Brown's and Marty's, and it's wonderful. And highly entertaining. And I think a lot of them never seen the movie before as well. So it's not like you need to know, you know, like Fame or Dirty Dancing. You don't need to know the movie. You can come in and it's a whole new experience. My 10-year-old didn't see the movie until he saw the show. And he likes the musical better. Yeah.
We do have a lot of our members who also say that, and I think there's something about watching something in person where the people are real, you're feeding off the audience. It is a great experience for anyone, especially for an introduction to shows and musicals. Yes,
for sure. For sure. Tough act to follow, though. They're not all going to be like Back to the Future, I tell you.
So true. So that is it. Thank you so much for giving us your time today. I just know that Back to the Future musical fans are going to absolutely love watching and listening to this back. So we really appreciate the time. We can't wait to be back at the show. It won't be that long, I'm sure. And we'll see you again on the stage. So thank you very much. Hope you've had a good
Thank you. Thank you.
My face aching. You've had me choked up emotionally. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye now.
See you soon.